Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
You know, one thing that is in the feasibility study is a millage rate of 0.95, which is very low. I mean, Crestview's, I think, is 6.8466. Fort Walton Beach is over 4. Niceville's is 3.5. So is that a reasonable projection for a city millage rate for a city to be able to function?
I'd like to defer to the Destin mayor, because we actually talked about millage rates.
So if you guys get that millage rate, you'll be the lowest in the state. Right now, Destin is the second lowest at 1.615. But just for that question specifically, I think that's a great and fair starting jumping off point, especially with the goals that you guys in Navarre have in mind.
So you may not be aware of this if you don't live in the Navarre area, but tomorrow's a pretty big day for Navarre. Sort of. Okay. And I say that because, well, you know, I always say something for a reason. There's a straw poll taking place tomorrow. And that means that there's an election taking place tomorrow, not run by the supervisor of elections, but run by an outside agency who's been hired by the folks who want to incorporate Navarre to do an election tomorrow to straw poll. This is not official. So voting precincts in Santa Rosa County 26, 29, 34, 35, 38, and 40 are going to have a chance to vote on one simple question. Do you want or do you not want to incorporate Navarre? Shall proposed legislation, a sample city charter, and a feasibility study be presented to the Florida legislature seeking the municipal incorporation of Navarre, Florida, yes or no? Now, we've had votes before. We've had a conversation about incorporation for as long as I have lived here. This has been an on again, off again. This year, it's been a particularly ferocious con and pro fight between the favors and the opposes. Joel Rudman, State Representative Joel Rudman, has been one of the key fours. Surprisingly went and asked the county commission for this to be put on the ballot. They said no for a variety of reasons. There's been a lot of acrimony behind the scenes, open bickering between politicians in Santa Rosa County over the between Joel Rudman and kind of everybody else. Almost everybody else. Allegations of who's lying, and it's a lot of drama, as you would expect in Santa Rosa. But the short takeaway is that there is a study, a feasibility study, that has been presented. It's 138 pages long. No, I have not read it all. I've glanced at some of the portions. But the arguments in favor of incorporation, again, there's going to be a vote tomorrow. Okay, so if you live in Navarre, there's a chance to vote on this tomorrow. The arguments for incorporation are things like we will be able to control our future, our destiny, make choices that are local. We have more accountability here locally. We will have, more respect from legislators, say, in Tallahassee, because when a city comes and talks to them, they care. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter too much. Everything goes through the county commission, which, the argument is that the county commission is too distant, too slow, too non-responsive, not focused enough on the needs of the particular area. Pensacola, the argument goes, Pensacola gets more attention as a city than they would get as merely being one slice of District 4 in the county commission that speaks as a unit for 300,000+ people in the entire county. There's more respect given to the cities. You have a voice, somebody who can actually argue and articulate on your behalf.
It's not just that little bit of money. It's also the revenue sharing that comes. It's also the vote on the DOT's, what is the
TPO?
The TPO, Transportation Planning Organization. It's who decides what projects get prioritized on all Department of Transportation projects. Right now, the city of Navarre, or what will potentially be the city of Navarre, has no voice.
So you don't have a seat at the table, for example, specifically on the TPO. I mean, the commissioner, yes, but of course the commissioners in all the counties get to sit on the TPO. And then also seats are given to members of the city councils. You know, Gulf Breeze and Milton and Pensacola all have seats. This would put another seat on there and an actual voice for it. Also, you have a person to advocate for you. You also have the opportunity to go to get grant money specifically for your area. The mayor of Destin, Bobby Wagner, he says that they have a $72 million budget, but only $12 million of that comes from ad valorem taxes. The rest is they go out and get money, and they believe that they're able to bring back $5 for every $1 that they raise. So those are some of the arguments. The roads, traffic, preserving the ability to develop in certain ways or exclude certain kinds of development. You know, we've kind of been through this before in talking about Perdido City. And so, you know, this is not all that new. But that's kind of generally the argument in favor of it, is there's been all this growth, this mismanaged growth. By the way, the mayor of Destin made an interesting point. He claimed that the problems you see in Destin, you know, we don't want to be Destin, all came from them not being a city, and they're trying to fix that now. So, okay, that's kind of the argument. The argument against has to do with a variety of things. First of all, you have an additional layer of government, right? That's one argument against, is you're going to have one more source of taxation, which you can't promise what they're going to be taxed at. It's just under $1 million. That means for every $1,000 of valuation on your house, you're going to pay about $1. Okay, a little bit less than $1. So if you have a $300,000 home, you're going to pay like $297 a year, something like that. Another point of contention is that the study itself is horribly, terribly, fundamentally flawed.
So I want to start by talking about the study and why the study is so flawed, and ultimately why that will cost you as a taxpayer or a small business owner so much more.
And that's Tamara Fountain, who used to work for Mayor Ashton Hayward here in the city of Pensacola. She's long ago been in Navarre, and they operate the pier, okay? So, and she's a good friend. I know a lot of these people. I don't know all of these people personally. The details of how it's flawed have to do, or the claim that the study is flawed, have to do with things like the millage rate being too low, unrealistically too low. Bobby Wagner from Destin says it's an okay place to start. I read that as it's probably going to have to go up. You know, you can sell it at a mill. Is it going to have to go up? And the reason it might have to go up is, do you have enough revenue to get to 3% equivalent? All of your total revenue for the city has to wind up being 3% of the ad valorem tax that you could get if you levied a 3-mill tax. Because then you're eligible for the money sharing of things like the gas taxes. And there's a whole bunch of money that becomes available to you, and a whole bunch of things that trigger if you get to that 3% level. But if you can't get to that 3% level, then you have to raise it some other way, presumably by property taxes. So there's arguments over whether that can be done. In the feasibility study, some of the things that got pointed out by Dave Peach, former county commissioner, somebody else who I respect and trust quite a bit, he used to build Air Force bases for a living before he became retired and a county commissioner, is he said, look, this whole study, he thinks that it is an incredible utopian document that doesn't work in the real life because of all sorts of things, including the amount of money that is budgeted for positions like lawyers and city managers that are, you're budgeting far too low an amount of money for any of these positions for anybody in the real world to actually take these jobs. That's what he says. And I looked at some of the numbers, and I think he's got some fair concerns.
Infrastructure is not cheap. Sidewalks do not cost $40 a foot. I look at the details of this as a practical person who does work at home, and there is no way they can make this happen. I'm an engineer. I'm not a Florida certified engineer, but show me one that'll work for $35 an hour for the county. Please show me that person.
Find me the engineer that hires on for 70 grand. And obviously no, you know, that can't work. Attorney costs, all of this. So the two prong criticism of the financials in the study are that, number one, you're too optimistic with your income revenue, your income. And number two is you're too optimistic with your expenditures in terms of the cost you're going to have to spend on personnel. In fact, it's so bad that
it's unbelievable. $35 for an engineer, a city attorney. Do we know how much an attorney costs? $400, $350 an hour? It's not possible, folks. Just look at the basic numbers. This document will make your head hurt. But if you just look at the basic numbers that you all understand and what it costs to do things, you know they can't get there from here. And that's why it's a utopian nightmare. And that's why I'm voting no for this, because this will kill the people of Navarre. You want to preserve Navarre? If this happens, you're going to set Navarre back.
Also, the county would gladly, he says, wash their hands of a variety of very expensive projects in Navarre, because it wouldn't be their responsibility anymore. You still have to pay the taxes for the county, but the county would no longer have to do some of the things that it's already kind of on track to do that are very expensive, because it would gladly spend that money elsewhere. So those are kind of the arguments against. And Navarre Beach has expressed a disinterest in being a part of this, but they are in the voting area, and they're a big part of the revenue because of all the property value out there. And so you might lose as much as a third almost, or in the vicinity of it, actually a little more than a third, of the ad valorem tax value, because the beach, if they don't vote to incorporate, or if they vote to separately incorporate as, you know, the city of Navarre and then the city of Navarre Beach. And so it's just some of the con arguments, in addition to, you know, it's going to grow, it's not going to be effective, it's an additional layer of government and so forth, okay? So this is very short in terms of summary. I just, for those of you who haven't been paying attention, aren't aware, there's a straw poll tomorrow, and there's an additional reason why I said I haven't paid a lot of attention. This is largely moot. And the largely mootness of it is because Don Gates, who is almost surely, I'm good friends with Lisa Newell, I think it's an extreme outside chance that she's going to win the election to be the state senator. Don Gates has said that he doesn't care for a straw poll. It's not going to persuade him. He wants an actual vote, a non-binding referendum, which would not be any earlier than 2026 on the fall ballot, because he says, we've played the clip before, that you can get a straw poll to say anything that you want. He wants an official process run by the supervisor of elections. If they say yes, he'll say yes. If they say no, he won't bring this forward. And so he wants an actual vote and says,
so I, until there can be a binding referendum that is handled by the supervisor of elections, and until the results of that non-binding referendum are reported publicly, I will not vote to incorporate a city in Navarre.
And I mean, it's simple, his view. Okay. Now, he also says he would have voted as a commissioner to let the people have the vote, but that did not happen. And so he says, since that did not happen, putting in the hands of a private outside contracting agency to do this vote is not going to persuade him at all. So what's the takeaway from me? Now, I am very reluctant to ever give you my opinion about something where I don't have to live with the consequences. I tend to not take a position on these things. And I had avoided. I actually got asked by Dr. Rudman to moderate a discussion forum, to moderate a debate. I kind of dragged my feet on it because I just didn't want to get involved in it one way or the other. But I decided that since this is coming up tomorrow, I would at least give you my perspective. Okay. And, you know, there are going to be some people that love me for this and some people that hate me for this. If it were me and if I lived in Navarre, I would vote no. I'm very reluctant to give these opinions generally because of, you know, it's, I don't have to live with the consequences, but I guess you look to me for advice. So in this case, there's a couple of reasons. I think the feasibility study is optimistic. I think that some of the numbers that they've used are wildly optimistic. I think that it's more likely to have to be a higher level of taxation in order to get to that 3%, and some of the optimistic assumptions they've made are genuinely optimistic. I also think that one of the main problems you have is if you're trying to solve your traffic issues, they're mostly FDOT problems. It's Highway 98. And if you want to find out how little the city can do to stop what FDOT wants to do in an area traffic-wise, ask Milton. They are already a city, and they wanted to stop the four-laning of Highway 90, and they could not. So now they got stuck with trying to figure out the best way to live with and manage the thing that at least the majority of city council members did not want. So I'm not persuaded that having a city is going to get you control over the traffic congestion, since the roads in the area are not going to be city-controlled roads. Also, it's some of the people involved. I trust Dave Peach tremendously. I think he's an incredibly competent and capable person. I trust Tamara Fountain implicitly. I know her. She's a very smart person. And between them and some of the other people who I know are on the anti-side, not everybody, okay. I like Wes Seiler. He's one of the big advocates for it. He seems like a very smart person on the pro side. I'm just telling you, for me, in order to incorporate, you'd have to like sort of overwhelmingly show me that it's going to be a good decision, like the same way I vote on amendments. It's not just that it has to be 51% good. It has to be like 75% good in order to put it in the Constitution. Once you incorporate, there's no going back. Not likely. And it seems to me like the hoped for benefits are small and maybe not as good as are projected, and that the costs are greater, or that the revenue is not as great as are projected. And you have this fundamental problem of a big chunk of the voting area in Navarre Beach doesn't seem to want incorporation with the rest of the mainland part of Navarre. So that's my very short, quick analysis of that issue. Again, the voting is tomorrow in all of those precincts. Please go and express your opinion, even though it won't matter because Don Gates isn't bringing it. Because if you don't go, if you're against and you don't vote, then the pro people are going to be like, see, we got 83%, you know? And is that going to be a realistic number? So you want to, and you know, and if you believe in it, go vote, because you want to get a somewhat realistic number, even though it won't mean anything, assuming that Don Gates is going to win his election. 525 here on News Radio 92.3. John, you live in Milton. We haven't been talking about this a lot. Was that relatively clear?
That was very clear.
Good. All right. Lots of videos online you can watch, arguments pro and con, plus the study if you really want to get into it. That's available on the Preserve Navarre website. Hey, if you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great place to go shopping for it. Good quality used cars, 1, 2, 3 years young, low miles, great condition. You know, maybe 4 years, 10 to like 40 or 50, maybe 60,000 miles, something like that. Cars that you can buy and then trust for a long time because they warranty them to 100. Okay, they stand by them to 100. And the reason that's valuable is because, especially now, with you're going to get, you know, Helene and Milton damaged cars, and it's kind of hard to make sure that they're not from an individual's perspective, but that's why you go with an institution that you know is going to be there for a long time. They will take care of you. They'll stand by their cars. And of course, you know, they got a large selection, 300 different cars and trucks. And if you don't find exactly what you want, send them to go looking for you. They'll go looking for you because they buy cars all the time. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Sweet chocolate reward. Sweet chocolate reward.
This is not just the sound of someone picking up a sweet treat at Walgreens. This is the sound of someone picking up a sweet treat right after receiving all their vaccines in one trip. This is the sound of treating yourself because you protected yourself.
Stop by or schedule both your flu and COVID-19 vaccines today and grab yourself a sweet treat while you're at it. Vaccine subject to availability. State, age, and health-related restrictions may apply.
New South Window lives southern weather, and our products are designed to keep the intense heat out and the cool air in. We prioritize keeping your family and your home comfortable all year round. That's why our energy-efficient windows and doors are made, installed, and guaranteed for life.
For a limited time only, save 35% off on New South Windows and Doors. Visit newsouthwindow.com/radio to learn more.
Mom, meet Sarah.
From first time Nana moments.
Yeah, welcome to Flight 101.
To annual girls trip moments. Your can't miss moments are worth protecting against RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or diabetes, you're at higher risk of being hospitalized from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at vaxassist.com.
So where should we go next?
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
I don't think the layoff, you can lay it off for me.
You got something you got to lay off?
Ain't the question, I got something, I'm just saying.
Oh, come on, if you got something you got to lay off?
Ain't the question, I'm just saying if I had a thing, you could lay it off, that's all.
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I was told by John that I should apologize for talking so quickly in the last segment.
Wait a second, I didn't say that. I was just telling
you.
No,
it's, and I, you know, it's funny. I get into debater mode and I can just go very fast. And I have to force my, all the time I have to force myself to talk slower, you know, and sometimes I just, you know, forget. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The IRS says it's putting a rush on 400,000 pandemic aid claims for businesses that were hit by Hurricanes Helene and Milton. The total amount of those claims coming out to about $10 billion, although the IRS did not provide a specific timeline on that. Motorists in California and Texas be on the watch for self-driving Teslas next year. CEO Elon Musk says the Model 3 and Y vehicles will be up and running in two states. He also showed off the CyberCab at an event yesterday. And former President Trump made a campaign stop yesterday. This was in Detroit, but he had this kind
of... You're blowing the punchline.
What?
Well, if you play, maybe I'm thinking of a different part of the speech. Go ahead, play the clip.
Well, we're probably thinking of the same thing, but here we go.
You want to know the truth? It'll be like Detroit. Our whole country will end up being like Detroit if she's your president.
But you got to tell him after that it was in Detroit that he gave that speech.
Well, I guess.
So the President Trump had stern words for the vicinity of Detroit, Michigan yesterday.
Just kind of a bad way to read the room, right?
Presented in Detroit yesterday.
Of course, there's been some reaction from Michigan folks on X or Twitter or whatever it's called these days. Governor Gretchen Whitmer responding on X with, "Keep Detroit out of your mouth, and you better believe Detroiters won't forget this in November." Everybody's tough on X, though.
Well, you know, it is Detroit. I'm from there originally. Give him a little bit of credit. Hey, if you're having any kind of trouble with the plumbing, a leak, a drip, a weird sound in the wall when you flush the toilet, the pressure, the heat, any of that is not good. Flat rate pricing from Barbary Plumbing, by the job, not by the time it takes. They will take care of you and even fix your mistakes. 477-8782 for Barbary Plumbing.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Hurricane Milton is blamed for at least 17 deaths in 8 Florida counties across the state. Many of those people killed in a tornado outbreak before the storm made landfall Wednesday night. Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna on Fox.
The worst hit area in Florida, I would say, is like the Punta Gorda region. And so the areas where the tornadoes touched down, I think, took it the worst. Also Sarasota County.
Those are on Florida's west coast. Hundreds of people have been rescued, including a 14-year-old boy on floating debris and a boat captain clinging to an ice chest in the Gulf of Mexico. Visiting a Kamala Harris campaign office, former President Obama says too many black men are making excuses for not supporting her. Former President Trump addressing the Detroit Economic Club.
You want to know the truth? It'll be like Detroit. Our whole country will end up being like Detroit if she's your president. You're going to have a mess on your hands.
Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan responds, crime is down and our population is growing. Lots of cities should be like Detroit. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 60 degrees in Pensacola, partly cloudy skies. Two teen brothers have been arrested for a murder near Fairfield Drive that happened earlier this month. Deputies say the teens followed Walter McQueen Dukes to a home after a minor car accident on October 2nd, then shot him several times. 16-year-old Andre Harley and 18-year-old Anthony Harley were arrested at a home in Santa Rosa County. They're now charged with homicide and tampering with evidence. Investigators say they believe the teens burned their clothing and tried to burn the gun magazine after the crime. Well, thanks to forensic evidence, a Pensacola man is now facing charges for two murders that happened back in 2023. 23-year-old Jerhan Porter was indicted last month on charges for the murders of Mavis Bedgood Jr. and Billy Frank Slayton. Bedgood's body was found with numerous gunshot wounds in the clay pits on Wagner Road earlier this year. Investigators say bullets from his body matched guns seized from Porter's home. Investigators also say an inmate at the Escambia County Jail shared a cell with Porter said he admitted to the killing as part of gang activity. Slayton's body was also found near the clay pits in a homeless camp. Bullets from his body also matched Porter's guns. Porter now facing charges for two counts of premeditated first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and possession of a firearm by a convicted delinquent. The investigation into that bank robbery last week continues. PPD says that happened at the Penn Air Credit Union on Airport.
I don't believe that there's been any incidents there before. Hopefully there won't be again. But, we're still working on that and hope to get some answers soon on that.
That's PPD's Mike Wood, who says they are still looking for any information that could lead them to a suspect. The suspect was described as being either a white or Hispanic male who walked in, demanded the money. Wood says he didn't display a weapon, but did claim to have one. Well, during the lead up to Hurricane Milton, thousands of people were under evacuation orders. Some of those came here to Pensacola, where the Bay Center was opened up. One misconception on those orders, though, is that they're mandatory. Public Safety Director Eric Gilmore clarified that yesterday and says mandatory evacuation orders just don't exist in Florida.
It's not voluntary. It is not mandatory. It is an evacuation order. We're okay. Telling you to evacuate. We have taken all life safety measures or elements and making that decision. and we're telling you, you need to leave that area. If you decide to stay, I'm going to tell you, if you decide to stay, that is on you. I am not going to put first responders in harm's way because you didn't heed the warnings and we were telling you what was going to happen.
But he says it's always up to the individual whether they heed that advice or not. And experiencing Hurricane Milton on the ground was terrifying. That's what Floridian Dan Maddox said after he rode out that storm in St. Petersburg this week. He said the storm featured some of the strongest winds and that the region has experienced.
Irma may come a little bit close, but feeling the wind, this was definitely a wind effect. And there's just no other way to describe it other than deadly.
And Maddox said he left his house and stayed in a concrete and steel apartment complex that he figured would withstand that storm a little bit easier. It is 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
Plenty of sunshine today with a high near 80 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. For Saturday, nice sunny skies, high near 78. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 61. Rounding out the weekend with plenty of sunshine, high near 82 and a low near 65. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEART Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And 60 degrees right now in Pensacola, 64 in Gulf Breeze, 54 in Milton. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Hey, Northwest Florida, Dave Ramsey here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gulf Coast Air Care. Owner Todd St. Ors and his team focus on the indoor air quality side of HVAC for the people who want comfortable, healthy, and energy-efficient homes and workplaces. Gulf Coast Air Care can help you with dusty, moldy, or leaky duct systems, hot or cold rooms, and odors and humidity issues. So, if you need duct cleaning, duct repairs, or air filtration, you should call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768. They've been trusted members of the community for over 30 years. And remember what Todd always says, if you don't have a good air filter, you are one. Call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768 or visit them online at gulfcoastaircare.com. And be sure and tell them that Dave Ramsey sent you.
I'm Robert Bender, your supervisor of elections. The general election is underway, and now is the time to make sure you have a say in this election. Election day is November 5th, and there are three ways you can vote. One, you can request a vote by mail ballot and return it by mail or leave it in a secure ballot intake station at any early voting site. Two, you can vote early at any one of our 10 area early voting sites from October 21st through November 2nd. And three, you can vote at your polling place on election day. Whatever you decide, just get out your vote.
For more information, visit escambiavotes.gov or call 850-595-3900.
When it comes to enhancing your outdoor experience, you need a companion that can keep up. The Kubota RTV at Parrish is your ultimate utility vehicle for every adventure. Prepping your deer plot or hauling gear, the RTV delivers powerful performance and versatility. Starting at $15,499 cash with a $2,000 rebate. Financing available as low as $285 a month for 72 months. Get your Kubota RTV today and let Parrish Tractor show you why they're more than a tractor store.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Good morning, 5:38 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. As we continue to gather information about the destruction that took place from Hurricane Milton in Central Florida, about 2.5 million people without power this morning. Death toll reports range from 14 up to 17 so far, largely connected to the tornado outbreaks on the south side of the path of the storm. 18 inches of rain in some places, flooding expected to persist for a long time. Not nearly as bad as it could have been, as the governor said yesterday, but still terrible for an awful lot of our state. And, of course, you know, we expect tens of billions of dollars worth of damage as a result of this. Yesterday, we had a very interesting conversation with Eric Gilmore, the director of public safety here in Escambia County, not just about what had happened in Helene or in Milton as he knew it at the time, but about lessons we can learn from this and how this should impact our own thinking about how to deal with storms. Eric Gilmore, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Great to have you. So we have a team already on location in Levy County. The sheriffs and the police went this morning to, I think, Bradenton. We just got off the phone with Mike Wood a few minutes ago. You obviously are the best informed of all of us. What are you hearing? What are you seeing in terms of what was experienced last night after landfall?
So, oddly enough, I mean, before landfall is where we had the biggest, you know, 150-plus tornado warnings and all the tornadoes that spun up on this thing. Everybody was, the talk yesterday on the calls with the state and everything was tornadoes, tornadoes, tornadoes. And then and you just played the clip. They were unusual tornadoes. You know, we usually get those short, spun-off, quick-run tornadoes.
Yeah, a zero or a one, and then it goes away, yeah.
Yeah. These were long-lasting tornadoes. It did a lot of damage and just unusual tornadic activity with this event. So that was the big thing yesterday on the calls. And then prior to landfall, the storm surge, the water values kept stacking on the West Coast, Sarasota, in that area. And then they got the inundation last night. Of course, we'll have a state call this morning. We'll start hearing it's 10:15 call about what's going to be needed, what they're seeing as far as damage assessments goes. But we will be sending Thor and emergency management team down to Sarasota. They'll start leaving today. I don't know if they'll be able to make the entire trip due to road conditions or anything like that. So we'll get a report about what the roads look like, and they'll get down to Sarasota and set up base operations and start helping out down there. We did have a team that stayed in Levy County and helped that county out throughout the duration of the storm. They were low on staffing levels and needed some help. So Travis Tompkins and Leah Helton went over there and helped them through the storm and rode the storm out. And report last night was they were faring very well. They had the offshore flow in Cedar Key. That's the Cedar Key area they were responsible for. And because of the offshore flow, they weren't seeing the storm surge values go up. So he thinks that they should be demoting today and probably get recasting. They go somewhere even further south to help out for another week. So we'll see what happens there as well. But we, you know, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of things going on. Of course, we opened up the Bay Center in Escambia County for a host shelter as of last night. I hadn't gotten this morning's count. There was only 7 people in there, but you know what? We offered it up, and who wanted to take advantage of it, they took advantage of it. And 7 people that was in there was actually from the South Florida area. So
okay.
It wasn't just local. So it was actually people from the evacuation zone. So, but what we'll do is we'll get on the state call this morning. We'll get the big picture and start putting pieces together and get people back on their feet.
And you're still the kid they left at home with the lights on to watch the house, right?
Well, right now, I'm sure I'll be tapped to go to Tallahassee. And I know they're the manpower after Helene, after doing that and everything.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'll be the last time I stayed back because I sent the entire team downrange. So I stayed back. So somebody's got to run.
Somebody's got to operate the business. Right. I know.
Right. So.
And you know, you still have other duties like, you know, fire and EMS that, you know, those things don't stop just because there's a hurricane a couple hundred miles away. It was my impression that this storm was weird in a bunch of different ways. It seems like the coming ashore, like earlier, wasn't quite the big problem that we thought it was. What turned out to be weird is on the what you'd normally call the clean side of the storm, the left-hand or north side of the storm, was all this rain and water and even back surge coming up against Jacksonville the morning after. But then on the south side of the storm, it was dry, but all these tornadoes. Like, I've never seen anything like that. This is weird, right?
No, absolutely weird. So it just goes to show you really can't predict these things. We can predict the track, but we can't predict what's going to happen once it gets into the area and what the bands start doing and how it's just. That's what we always say. You can never say this storm's going to be like this storm. No two storms are alike, and this one was as far as historically as storms go. And you know you kind of got an idea of what you're facing, but this one was weird, how it kind of fell apart on the back end, all the tornadic activity on the front end, and then the north quadrant got the storm surge. It was a weird storm. It really was, Andrew. So, and I'm sure the meteorologists take it, look at it, break it down, tear it apart, and figure out why it did what it did. Or after Sally, you know, we had Sally do some weird stuff. We had flooding inland. Then we had storm surge on the coast, and we never thought about the water coming out and the water coming in stacking. So we learned the Sally.
Yeah.
Things that do that. So I'm sure we'll learn on this one as well, what kind of transpired and what happened.
And I mean, I know on the dirty side of the storm, it's expected to get tornadoes, but, you know,
Yes. You
also typically have rain bands being drawn in, mixing with those tornadoes. And I'm guessing, because I'm super just a civilian, I don't really know anything, but I'm guessing that it was actually the dry maybe made it worse because that allowed a more violent interaction of the winds that produce the tornadoes. Does that seem like right to you?
It seems logical. Absolutely. Because they was talking about that drier air mixing in as it was making landfall coming ashore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was that's the piece that they kept saying is we're going to have that drier air. We're going to have that little bit of wind shearing in there. And the storm was going to downgrade to a Cat 3 at landfall, which it did. And they predicted that, right? So maybe those elements and those pieces that affected the storm and the downgrading is what caused all these spinning up the tornadoes and doing it, because you get all those crosswinds in there.
Yeah, and I just know, like, people probably, you know, I know John had friends who, you know, they evacuated South Miami, 55 tornado warnings in Miami. You know, like, the place you thought you could go to be safe turned out not to be. I did want to ask you more for our what we can learn and, you know, questions that people might have. The one thing that, you know, in thinking about evacuations, and by the way, first of all, can we just make just a fact clarification? In Florida, there is no such thing as a mandatory evacuation. There's a sternly worded evacuation, but there's never a legal requirement to evacuate, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
An evacuation order is an evacuation. It's not voluntary and it's not mandatory. It is an evacuation order. If we're
okay.
telling you to evacuate, we have taken all life safety measures or elements and making that decision. And we're telling you, you need to leave that area. If you decide to stay, I'm going to tell you, if you decide to stay, that is on you. I am not going to put first responders in harm's way because you didn't heed the warnings and we were telling you what was going to happen.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. And in fact, we had somebody text in the other day that people who stay ought to have to pay, just like the dumb motorist law driving into water, you know, that
right.
You ought to have to pay for the first responders that come and get you in a hurricane or afterwards. I mean, I totally agree with that. What I did want to, and I was thinking about this is, okay, so people evacuated, you know, like from Tampa. And when the storm passes, your first instinct is get back on the road and get back home, protect my stuff, find out the damage, and get back to work cleaning. I'm guessing that that's actually not the best practice for a variety of reasons, but how long should you wait? You know, if something happens, when is the right time to get back home?
Right. No, and this is a very good question. So here's the deal. So the first 24 hours, emergency crews are going house to house, and they're doing windshield inspection. They're doing rapid damage assessment. They're doing rapid damage assessment, cutting house to house search, rescue. So that's the first 24 hours. All that is taking place. If you are on the road, clogging up or slowing down them doing their job, because somebody's got to clear the road for you to get back to begin with.
Right.
So the first 24 hours, you're doing that. 48 hours, we're cleaning up what we didn't get. Power crews are coming on the backside, and they're trying to get some of the lines up out because you got low-hanging lines and you got these other things, the trees, low-hanging trees. So we got tree companies in there with the cut and toss to go in there. Our first cut and toss is one lane. We're open to one lane so emergency service can get through there and do what we need to do. Second day is
by the way, just opening. I know most people know this, but cut and toss just means cutting the tree limbs and things that have gotten in the road and tossing them to the side of the road just to make space to drive through, right? I mean,
that's right. It is a single lane. We're not clearing the road wide open because we're doing a rapid assessment. We're trying
right.
to get down range. We're trying to see what the damage is. We're trying to see who needs help. And we're trying to get to you. So that's immediately in the first 24 hours. That's a big part of the operation. You got federal USAR on the ground. They're trying to get in there as well. We're trying to get a big picture here of what
urban search and rescue teams, right? Go on.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. No. And that's trying to make it, you know, there's people who have never been, the people moved here a month ago from somewhere, you know, like, what is this hurricane?
Right.
You know, so.
So day two is absolutely cleaning things up. The power crews in there on the backside, they're trying to get the lines up. They're trying to get the lines out of the road, all the hazards up. And the leaning trees are going to potentially fall in the next couple of days. Get those things cleaned up because you don't want what we call widowmakers, those leaning trees on cars or people as they're trying to get into the area. And then the day three, if you could give 3 days And I know everybody wants to get back. You want to see what your property looks like. You want to get back and try to get it cleaned up and everything. And I understand that. But with all the services and all the emergency stuff going in there, and then you on top of it convoluting getting everybody in there and crowding the area is not helping us get our job done quicker. And if we can get in there quicker and get our job done quicker, we can get you in there quicker so you can get to your property. So about 3 days, you'll hear them say, please don't come to this area after Hurricane Michael. It was huge.
Yeah.
Please stay out. You know, if you could, it was Category 5. If you could stay out at least a week, you know, that lets us move freely. That lets us get in there and get out. And that's what we're trying to do. So life safety is first and foremost important. So we're trying to do life safety as quick as we can. And if everybody's in there, and the looky-loos, those are the ones. It's not the people that are trying to get back. It's all the people trying to see the damage themselves.
Yeah.
Those are the annoying ones. So you don't even live in the area, but you're trying to see what the damage is. Just stay out of the area. Pictures will come out, I promise you. You'll get pictures. And
yeah,
but anyway, let us do our job. So.
And I actually was going to ask you that, okay? I know that the damaged tourists, you know, the people who are into it for storm porn or whatever, those people are a problem. But I genuinely ask this question because I don't know. Are news people a problem? You know, people who are wanting to stand there and show you how much the wind is blowing on their windbreaker, people who are, you know, wearing a helmet on TV, or people who are... You know, weirdly, the people who are standing where there's nothing happening, I get they're probably not an issue, but do news people contribute to this problem of, you know, public safety and distraction and whatever? What's your opinion about that?
Necessarily, because to be honest with you, we got to use the media to get the message out. Don't come into the area.
Okay.
And there's the reasons why. So no, not necessarily. Now there are those one-off news crews who are just, I'm going to get in there, I'm going to get in the way.
Yeah.
And you know, typically we go say, hey, you're in a hazard area or you're impeding our operation, and they do abide by it and say, oh, yeah, sorry about that, I'm going to get out of the way. Or if we say, can you please go over to this area? You'll be out of the way or out of our operation. But typically, no, not necessarily. I mean, while they're out there, but no, as a whole, I haven't had that much of a problem with news crews and everything. But like I said, we got to use them to get the message out too. So we're going for you guys to push this message. Please stay out of these areas. You know, the barrier islands, we're going to have a checkpoint at the bridge. So
yeah.
If you don't have property there or in the first 24 hours, you don't need to be over there. We're not going to let you over there because we got to get a job done. So those really, really areas with choke points, we'll control those pretty good and keep everybody out who's not necessarily – who didn't need to go in there because everybody wants to go to Bear Island after a damage, right?
I gotcha. Yeah, they want to see it. Hey, last
they
thing
– They want to see it.
Eric, before I let you go, just a very last quick thing is I want to get a handle on this EV fires from saltwater intrusion problem. I know the governor has mentioned it, and it's kind of come up a few times. But you're a fire guy at heart, and you're an EMS guy at heart, and you're a public safety and all this. How big or not big of a problem is that, especially with the ever-increasing percentage of EVs? We got the ECATs getting these EV buses and so forth. Tell me about that. I heard you groan when I asked the question.
They are a big problem, Andrew. A lot of people don't realize this. When you get saltwater intrusion into those EVs and it gets into the battery system, those things, while they might not immediately react and catch fire, as they sit there and they start drying out and start corroding some of the systems, they do start spontaneously combusting, which causes house fires. So if you left your EV in a storm surge on the coastline, on the barrier island, in your garage, and you've got water inundation, there's a good chance that thing's going to catch fire in the next 2 to 3 days and burn your house out. I mean, there, Ian, that was such a major problem down there in Sanibel Island, Captiva, as the companies were pulling these cars out. They were catching fire on back of the wreckers. And they actually... Yeah, and putting those things out is a nightmare because it takes a copious amount of water to put those things out. They started just digging holes and burying them to stop them from burning. It was just that big of a deal. So if you have an electric vehicle, please help us out by getting it out of the storm surge. That way we don't have those to contend with as well. So get those out of those storm surge areas.
Okay, no, wow, burying them to stop the flames. That's amazing. And as you say, on a delay a couple of days later, too. Eric Gilmore, Director of Public Safety, always great information. Thanks so much for doing what you do. Please convey our appreciation to your folks who have gone downrange, and be safe when you go as well. Eric, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I mean, I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was quite that bad. You know, so that was pretty interesting to hear from him about that and all of the advice about when to return, when not to return, which is confirmed by the reports we're getting out of those areas who are there basically like, stay out, because all the returning traffic has now clogged the interstates yesterday. Like, same problem in reverse, right? Can't get out, can't get in. 437-1620. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are fantastic realtors with great experience. And the reason I say that is not just because they've sold a lot of homes. I mean, that's true. Okay, 175 sold last year, 130 plus sold this year. I was talking to Christina Leavenworth about this just yesterday. But one of the things that gets you is experience. They know what's normal. And, you know, a lot of times, whether it's negotiating for a contract or purchasing a car or anything else, it's just knowing what's normal that helps you. And in selling a home, same thing. Because when somebody says, look, I need you to replace that roof, but it's only 10 years old. Yeah, I need you to replace that or I can't buy it for insurance. Is that normal? Is that not normal? Is that something you should have to do selling a home? The hot water, I said it, the water heater, the air conditioning unit, all of that stuff. Will you even be able to get insurance? Like, these are things that you wouldn't have thought of years ago at all, but now with the insurance market, they're big factors, plus Helene, plus Milton. And so knowing what's normal and solving the problems that come up because you've solved them 10 times before or 20 times before, that's what you get when you go with somebody with that kind of experience. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Hi, I'm Ron Helms, and I'm running to be your next county commissioner in District 4. I'm a long-term business owner, military veteran, and ordained clergy. As a fiscal conservative and Second Amendment supporter, I have a passion for public service with strong community engagement. As your next county commissioner, I will have a strong impact on crime and gun violence, affordable housing, and combating high insurance rates. I'm asking for your support and your vote on November 5th.
Paid for by Ron Helms, Democrat County Commission, District 4.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCo Summit returns October 16th to Pensacola Beach. Sponsored by Data Revolution, this is your opportunity to get connected with top-level cybersecurity, AI, and machine learning industry experts. Featuring a free career fair, Jurassic Park escape room, prizes, and a performance by the ultimate 80s party band, the Molly Ringwalds. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Visit itenwired.com for tickets.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. An IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, submitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Get the midday news live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Celebrating the first phase of its expansion to McDonald's by giving away a free original glazed donut to anyone who shows a receipt from the fast food chain. The offer is valid nationwide until October 14th.
Hey, look, if you're going to make one bad decision, make two, man. like a Whopper and fries and a soda and a Krispy Kreme. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, super hungry. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, the trial date is being set for next spring in Sean Diddy Combs' sex trafficking case. He appeared before a judge in Manhattan. The trial date was set for May 5th. Officials in Clearwater say 500 people were rescued from a flooded apartment complex yesterday. First responders, of course, started getting calls about the rising water in that complex on Wednesday. Emergency crews were able to go door to door, and again, 500 people rescued from that complex. And this year's Nobel Peace Prize being awarded to a Japanese organization comprised of survivors of the U.S. atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Nihon Hidenkiyo began as a grassroots movement dedicated to achieving a world free of nuclear weapons.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. John, when I say dumb things, you've got to correct me. I said Whopper.
I know.
How'd you let that go?
Well, I did point it out to you. Let's get it straight.
That's right, after the fact. No, man, go ahead and tell me on the air. It's all right. You dummy. You big dummy.
Big dummy.
You can be my Fred Sanford, and I'll be Lamont. 437-1620. An influencer married herself and is now divorcing herself? Why would that get her canceled? And Governor DeSantis gets canceled again, coming up in the Transgressor ceremony in 20 minutes?